And turn with me, if you would, to Proverbs chapter 3, if you have a Bible with you. Proverbs chapter 3. We've been in a study in the book of Proverbs, and the last couple of weeks, kind of a sub-series within the series of Proverbs, this sub-series being food and work, and this week, sleep. We've looked at food and work in Proverbs and elsewhere in the Bible. These seemingly commonplace things, these everyday things, these things that perhaps we don't give much thought to. We've been seeing through food and through work in the book of Proverbs that these can't be thoughtless givens. That these can't be just have-tos. That these can't just be things that, well, we do, but we don't think much of them, but we've seen that they're opportunities, serious opportunities, big opportunities for either sin or worship. We spend a lot of our lives doing these things. With sleep, it makes up almost 1/3 of your life. Whatever your age is, think about it. 1/3 of that, almost 1/3 of your life you've spent on a mattress. Doing nothing. Not doing much of any brain activity except dreams that you later can't figure out or remember. Listen to these stats on our sleep problems, though. As of 1997, according to CNN, sleep problems became the number one most common health-related problem in America. We sleep on average now 6.9 hours a night, which is almost an hour less than the average of just a few decades ago. So just think late 70s. The average was a whole hour more back then. Losing 3 hours of sleep can reduce the efficiency of your immune system by 50%. That's why you get sick. That's why I get sick, I know that. Sleep deprivation costs $150 billion each year in higher stress and reduced worker productivity. 43% of Americans report that daytime sleepiness or drowsiness interferes with their normal daytime activities. It interferes with. There are some things they're not able to do or able to do well because sleep, lack of sleep, rather, is interfering with it. And things would be so much worse, of course, if there weren't things like Starbucks and energy drinks. So whatever these stats have shown us, realize that most of us try to get past the effects of these kind of statistics by juicing up mid-afternoon and plowing through. Rarely do we say at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm exhausted, I must go to sleep early tonight. Usually what we say is, I'm exhausted. I must get a Red Bull. I must get coffee. I must do something. Seems like we don't like sleep. It seems like we don't want sleep. It seems like sleep's not important to us. It seems like even when we do want sleep, for many of us, it eludes us. A good night's sleep is big business now, isn't it? Just stay up late and watch some infomercials. They sell beds and weird pillows in the middle of the night because they know people like you are up because you can't sleep. It's brilliant. And it reminds us that there are a lot of people out there who aren't sleeping well, either by choice or maybe not by choice. Proverbs 3 talks about sleep that can be sweet instead, though. Look at verse 21. Proverbs 3:21, my son, let them not vanish from your sight. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, so they will be life to your soul and adornment to your neck. Then you will walk in your way securely, and your foot will not stumble. Here's the key verse, 24. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden fear, nor of the onslaught of the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. How do we get proverbial, biblical, godly, sweet sleep? Well, first, our sleep is to be thoughtful and theological. Our sleep has to be thoughtful and theological if it's going to be sweet sleep. And where we start when we start to think about sleep is that you need it and God doesn't. The essence of the theological lesson in sleep is that you're not God. God doesn't need sleep. It says so in Psalm 121 verse 4. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. You are not God. God doesn't need sleep, but you do. God is self-sustaining. God is self-existing. God is self-energizing. There's a great old theological word for this, aseity. One of God's attributes is aseity, that he exists from himself. Nothing else in this world exists from itself. It has a maker. It has a sustainer. God exists from himself. He doesn't need refueling. Listen to the way it's put in Psalm 50. In verse 10, this is God speaking. For every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on 1,000 hills. But if I were hungry, I wouldn't tell you. God doesn't get hungry. God doesn't need food. But if God did get hungry, he wouldn't tell you. The world is mine and all it contains. God doesn't get hungry. But if he did get hungry, would God need to say to you, hey, I'm hungry. Can you help me out? Can you sneak me some food? Hey, can I bum $2 off of you so I can go to McDonald's? God doesn't need food, but even if he did, he wouldn't ask you. But it says, shall I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of male goats? Of course, he doesn't eat. Instead, look at the way this works. Call upon me in the day of trouble, and I will rescue you, and you will honor me. God doesn't call on us for help. We call on him for help. He's the sustaining God who gives, who has strength left over to give to billions of people. Listen to the way it's put in Acts 17. Paul preaches at the Areopagus and says, the God who made the world and all things in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, he doesn't dwell in temples made with hands. Literally, you can't put him in a box. You can't say there he is. That's where he dwells. There's his home. He's infinite. Nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything. You say, I thought God is served. I thought we do serve him. We do in one sense, but he's not served as though he needed anything. Like we improve him, like we better him, like we do something he couldn't do for himself. Instead, he gives to all people life and breath and all things. God gives. We don't give to God. God gives to us. We're not the ones with the abundant strength. He is. So even in giving strength to him or giving worship to him or giving lives before him, who empowers us to do that? He does. Isaiah 40 told us that. Zach read it earlier for us. God doesn't become weary or tired. He gives strength to the weary. Now, we're not like that. We are utterly dependent on him, not just for sleep, or not just for food, but for our very existence. Colossians 1 and Hebrews 1 both tell us that Jesus, according to his powerful word, holds all things together. All things hold together. You think of atomic connections. You think of the cellular, molecular structure of things and why that goes together. Why magnets go together. Something we can even see. God holds things together. Why do you stay together and not just disintegrate into all these floating parts, these little atoms? God keeps you together. So when we sleep, it reminds us, it's this vivid one-third of our life picture of our own helplessness, of our own weakness, of our own dependence, of the fact that we're not God. We're made in his image. We looked at that last week. It's true, we're made in his image, but that doesn't mean we're God. And one of the ways we're not made like him is that he doesn't need to sleep
And he has made us so that we do need to sleep. So sleep, rightly understood, should be humbling. It should be humbling to get to the point where you feel in your body so desperate that you curl up like a baby and you become immobile. We can't sustain ourselves. You can't will yourself into keep going. You can do that on a short-term basis, but you can't keep doing it. God puts us in his plan in a daily 7 to 8 hour coma where you can get nothing else done. You can't multitask and sleep. Some of you are good at multitasking. You can't multitask and sleep. When we sleep, we're vulnerable. We're unprotected. Our body shuts down both something of its consciousness and even its work. That's why you get colder at night. That's why you need covers at night. Your body goes into a very brief hibernation period. We drool when we sleep. We stink when we sleep. You wake up and you're groggy, right? It takes a while to get out of sleep. Sometimes you fight to get out of sleep. Sometimes it takes a while for you to move from sleepiness to awakeness. And Proverbs addresses that too with a humor aside. Proverbs 27:14. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning. Good morning! What does it say? It will be reckoned a curse to him. I love that. Proverbs 27:14 acknowledges that when you wake up, you don't want to hear loud noises. You don't want to have a loud conversation. Cursed be the guy who's loud in the morning, according to Proverbs. Now, sleep has an inherent God increasing vision and a man decreasing vision, right? We tend to think of ourselves too highly. We think too much of ourselves. We all do this. It's part of sin. It's part of wanting to be godlike. We know that good theology, we know that God's plan is for man to see, human beings to see their proper place, and for God to see God in his proper place. Sleep shows us that, but that doesn't mean we should overdo it. The second thing to think about is that our sleep is not to be overdone. You could say, well, if there's a theological lesson in sleep, bring it on. You know, if some theology is good, then more theology is better. Let's see if I can do a 13-hour theology lesson in sleep. Well, teenager, don't buy into that, because Proverbs 20:13 says, do not love sleep. We talked about the sluggard a little bit last week. The sluggard in Proverbs has two problems. He hates work and he loves sleep. So we emphasized last week that he hates work. This week, we're seeing that he loves sleep. And that loving sleep in Proverbs leads to a cycle of laziness, where laziness feeds sleep and sleep feeds more laziness. Proverbs 19:15. Laziness casts into a deep sleep. Or Proverbs 6, look at this. If you want to thumb over in your Bible from Proverbs 3 to Proverbs 6, look at the text there. In verse 9, how long will you lie down, O sluggard? How long are you going to stay in bed? Many parent has asked that of their kids. When will you rise up from your sleep? And here's the sluggard's answer. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. You know what that means? Just a little bit more. I remember saying that to my parents. Just a little bit more. Come on, just a little bit more. It's like money, where it's never enough. It's just a little bit more that you need. For the sluggard, you ask him, at what point would you get to the, you know, to that level where you say, ah, there, now I'm rested. The sluggard keeps saying, just a little bit more. Loving sleep in Proverbs has a spiral effect that leads to other sins, because loving sleep has to do with lacking self-control. It can relate to lacking self-control in other areas, like lacking self-control in eating, or lacking self-control for us in spending, or lacking self-control even in anger. You see, it feeds the pursuit of instant gratification, of doing what you want to do. So there's some measure in Proverbs that the sluggard is to fight his way out of his sluggardliness. If we give in to instant gratification, whether that be sleep or food, and we live in a culture of instant gratification, don't we? No doubt, this is the air we breathe, this is the water we swim in. It indeed is a culture of instant gratification. Proverbs warns that you keep giving in to instant gratification and you don't go God's path. You go the way of foolishness and sin. It's even clear in Proverbs that loving sleep leads to making stuff up, making up reasons to stay in bed. Proverbs 26, verse 13. The sluggard says, "There's a lion in the road. A lion is in the open square. As the door turns on its hinge, so does the sluggard on his bed." Just like the purpose of a hinge is to do nothing but turn. That's all it does. A sluggard on his bed, all he does is flip and turn and refix his pillow and lay back down. And he'll even make stuff up. What I hear? Is that a lion out there? Well, I shouldn't go to work if there's a lion in the street, and if I'm going to not go to work and stay home, I might as well sleep. He's making stuff up. He's renegotiating reality in his own mind in order to justify the desires of his own heart. The third thing we see is that our sleep is to be disciplined. And if you've noticed so far, what we've done is we've kind of said, on the one hand, sleep is good because it has a theological lesson in it. And then we've said, on the other hand, sleep is not to be overdone. It's wrong. It's an idol to abuse sleep. But back on the other hand again, our sleep is to be disciplined. Proverbs, as I said, when it addresses the sluggard, it assumes that there should be a discipline to get up and to press on, to do things that our body doesn't want to do sometimes. Paul puts it like this in 2 Corinthians 9. He says that he beat his body daily to bring it into subjection. Not literally beat his body, didn't punch himself. It's a figure of speech of he beat his will into submission. His body doesn't do what it's supposed to do. Your body doesn't do what it's supposed to do. The gravity of your body, like if you didn't do anything and you just let it fall, the gravity of your body is all kinds of different sins. And for some, it might not be oversleeping. For some, it might be undersleeping in loving work. But Paul disciplined himself in his sleep, presumably, like the woman of Proverbs 31. The famous woman of Proverbs 31 in verse 15, it says, she rises while it's still night, while it's still dark out. It's hard to get up when it's dark. It's hard to get up when it's cold. She rises while it's still dark to give food to her household and portions to her maidens. In verse 18, it says, her lamp doesn't go out at night. She burns it at both ends. Now, we're going to talk about how that can be wrong. There's a way to do this where it's right. In Proverbs 31, it's clearly right. This is a woman whose worth cannot be measured. This is a woman who's hard to find. This is a woman who shall be praised in the gates. This is a woman who's godly. And it says she disciplines her body to get up while it's dark because there's a lot of work to be done. And she stays up late because, well, it's convenient. Kids go to bed and lo and behold, you can get some stuff done. The Apostle Paul talked about his hardship in his missionary service in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 27, like this. I've been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights. This is a decisional kind of sacrifice of sleep for God's glory and for the love of others. There is a time, as it says in Proverbs 6:4, to give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. There's a time to tell yourself, to preach to yourself, get up, sluggard. Now, sometimes there are extenuating circumstances. Sometimes there are physiological reasons why you can't get up. In college, my senior year, I finally got disciplined with sleep. The first 3 years of my college experience, stay up to 4. You got 20 minutes before a class in the afternoon, nap real fast, right? And you know, you just live in this world of sleeplessness because you're undisciplined and you're a stupid kid away from mom and dad. And, you know, at a Christian college, you don't go out and get drunk. You just stay up late in your dorm room and, you know, play Sorry or something. I don't even know what we did, but we stayed up late. And by my senior year, I was finally getting disciplined. I started dating Sarah, and so she was, you know, I'm starting to be a man now and, you know, hope this girl will marry me, so I'm going to try to be a man. And then I had this season of, I couldn't get up. I mean, I was sleeping 10 hours. I would put my alarm clock on the other side of the room, and so I'd have to get up to go turn it off, but I would snooze for like 2 hours straight every 10 minutes. I see some of you nodding. You can relate, huh? And I couldn't figure out what it was. I was writing Proverbs sluggard passages on my alarm clock. So I'd get to it, and I'd see, get up, you sluggard. And I go, I don't care. Go back to bed. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong. Well, I found out what was wrong. I had to have a mole removed. I had a suspicious mole. And then it was more suspicious. So they'd take a big chunk out, a biopsy. That was in Michigan. And then I went back to college in Virginia with the stitches still in. Supposed to go to the doctors. But I told my friend to just take the stitches out with my Swiss Army knife. And so it got infected. So I had a bad staph infection, which is probably why I was having a hard time getting up. So sometimes you're not a sluggard. There's actually a physiological explanation for it. You know, maybe it is that you're need to exercise. Maybe it means that you're just eating poorly and your body's got to do a lot of digesting at night and it's tired. Now, let me give some clarifications to the above about discipline. The first I've already said in a sense that it can be physiological, but also on a practical level that we're not made up of the same constitution. We know that. But we're all different. Some people only need 5 hours sleep. Sarah's mom, my mother-in-law, can pull all-nighters. She's 55. She can pull all-nighters 2 or 3 times a month. And then she just does a couple of cat naps the next day. I am not like that. I can do 4 or 5 hours sleep, 4 or 5 hours a night for only a few nights in a row, and it catches up with me. I get sick. My body gives up, and I crash. I know that. I have to just guard it and not give into wanting to, you know, okay, just sleep less and get it done. No, I know my body says you need rest. And so I have to know my constitution. You have to know your constitution. You also have to know that there are seasons of life that are unusual. So common sense comes into this, right? If you're starting a business, you realize that maybe the first year of starting this business, you're going to sleep less. You've just decided that's going to be okay. And I wouldn't say that that's wrong necessarily. But often where we miss the point is that we think it's just physiological and it's just practical. And we think it's just a matter of having better health or being a better person or just being happier for the sake of our family or just feeling better in our bones. We think of strategizing about our sleep simply in terms of the body. But what about God? There's a heart issue here. The Bible doesn't give us a hard, fast, legalistic rule where once you go past 9 hours, you are a sluggard. You get the red S on your shirt and have to wear it the rest of the day. We don't have a clear demarcation in our Bibles about what's sluggardliness and what's too little sleep that isn't trusting God. We don't know. It's like so many principles in our Bible, like food. When you go to the buffet, there's a fine line between being a good steward, because you paid the same price as the person who's just eating a salad. You want to be a good steward and eat a lot of food, but then you could also be a glutton, which would be wrong, right? So the Bible has all these kinds of things where it doesn't give us the specific rule. it tells us that it's a heart issue and reminds us that that's where the battle must be fought. Another qualification of the above about discipline, that our sleep is to be disciplined, is that in Psalms, there's a different kind of sleeplessness which isn't intentional. It's not exactly intentional. Listen to Psalm 6. In verse 6, I'm weary with my sighing. Every night I make my bed swim with my tears. I dissolve my couch with my tears. My eye is wasted away with grief. It's become old because of all my adversaries. Weary with sighing, at night he can't seem to sleep. Instead, he's weeping in his bed. Or listen to Psalm 102 in verse 4. It says, my heart has been smitten like grass and is withered away. And the verses before tell us that there's an unspecific distress in his life. That's all it says. Because of my distress. We don't know what it is. We don't know how severe it is. We don't know how long it's been going on. We don't know whether it's, you know, just physical or whether it's also spiritual. But it says, indeed, I forget to eat my bread. Because of the loudness of my groaning, my bones cling to my flesh. I resemble a pelican of the wilderness. I become like an owl of the waste places. I lie awake. I become like a lonely bird on a housetop. The Psalms are loaded with examples of sleepless heaviness. Sleeplessness that comes from a heavy awareness of heartbrokenness in this world. Psalm 22 in verse 2. Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer. And by night, but I have no rest. Yet you are holy. What you always see in these Psalms is prayer to God amidst their sleeplessness. Remembrance of his promises. And also prayer for help. Prayer for help. Remembering who he is, and then pinning your hope, your problem that you're going through on the God who you're praising. I have no rest. I'm calling to you. I don't sense you answering. But you're holy. I know you're holy. You see, he's preaching to himself and he's praising God even amidst this turmoil that he's in. I wonder if some of us can't relate to these kinds of passages of sleeplessness in the Psalms because our sin and other people's sins and wickedness in this world and the heartaches of being in this fallen world don't bother us enough. I wonder. You might say, up to this point, I was kind of cheering myself on saying, I sleep great. I mean, give me a pillow, give me a ladder. I could fall asleep on a ladder. Maybe that's you. Well, maybe you need to read some of the Psalms where there is a true heartache that involves at times some sleeplessness because of enemies or sin or not sensing God's nearness and his comfort. Not one that wallows in self-pity, but those kinds of psalms that assume that there's a restlessness and a sleeplessness which comes from a heartbroken experience in this world. And yet, on the other hand, the fourth thing, our sleep is not to be despised and or neglected. Our sleep cannot be despised or neglected. Listen to Psalm 127. In verse 1, it says, unless the Lord guards the city, well-known words, the watchman keeps awake in vain. The watchman's supposed to stay awake. That's his job. But it's futile. It's vain. If he stays awake and the Lord wasn't watching the city. A watchman who's awake is just some guy on a wall. And that's it. Unless the Lord watches over the city. It is vain, empty, futile for you to rise up early and to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors or anxious toil is literally what those two words mean. For he gives to his beloved even in his sleep. Now, remember, Proverbs 31 praised the woman who rose early and went to bed late. And yet Psalm 127 says it's an empty trust for you in anxious toil to cut corners on your sleep. He gives sleep. Some translations say at the end of this, he gives sleep to his beloved. And that would be true. If you cut corners on your sleep in your anxious toil, you forget that he gave you the gift of sleep. You forget that this is a gift. He made you to rest. You are not infinite. You cannot keep going. You know from your own experience that it's a temporary fix. And ultimately, it's a lie. Eventually, you will crash. Eventually, you may get sick. You might get cancer from cutting corners with sleep in order to work out your anxious toil, to trust yourself. But some translations have, like this one does, he gives his beloved even in his sleep. That means during his sleep. While you're sleeping, God is not. While you're sleeping, God is working. God is sustaining. God is protecting. You load the shotgun in vain at night when you go to sleep. You lock the doors in vain. You set the security system in vain if the Lord doesn't watch your home. No criminal can enter your house or harm your family apart from your Father's will. He is sovereign. He is vigilant. He is awake. He never sleeps. He gives even while you sleep. So we can't trust our ability to cut corners and make things work and get things done by just sleeping less. Psalm 33, verse 17 tells us that a horse is a false hope for victory, nor does it deliver anyone by its great strength. Battles are won, especially in the day of David and Solomon, and before that, all the way back to Joshua. Battles are won with horses. Horses are no, it'd be like us saying tanks. It'd be like us saying bombers. A tank is a false hope for victory. It doesn't deliver anyone. Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him and on those who hope in his loving kindness. So our disciplined sleeplessness with anxiety, like Psalm 127 is talking about, can be an indication of you shortcutting that inherent lesson that you're not God. And it can be reminiscent of the garden, the lie sold to Eve in the garden. You can be like God. You can keep going. You can will it. You, in your will, can conquer tiredness and keep going. That's a lie. And it's a lie that echoes the lie sold Eve in the garden. It's sinfully, possibly sinfully, playing God, where we pretend that we're self-sustaining or trying to deny our humanness and its own weakness the way God made us. It's believing that this really does rest on us. Whatever weight is on you really does rest on you. That if you don't get up and fix it, if you don't get up and write it down, if you don't get up and clean it, Atlas is going to shrug and your world is going to come toppling down. Where's God in that though, friend? Where is God in that? Listen to what John Piper says about this passage of Psalm 127. Once a day, God sends us to bed like patients with a sickness. The sickness is a chronic tendency to think we're in control and that our work is indispensable. To cure us of this disease, God turns us into helpless sacks of sand once a day. How humiliating to the self-made corporate executive that he has to give up all control and become as limp as a suckling infant every day. He goes on to say, sleep is a parable, that God is God and we are mere men. God handles the world quite nicely while a whole hemisphere sleeps. Sleep is like a broken record that comes around with the same message every day. Man is not sovereign. Man is not sovereign. Man is not sovereign. He is not nearly so impressed with our late nights and early mornings as he is with the peaceful trust that casts all anxieties on him and sleeps. Now let's remember again that this is a complex matter, that this whole message has been one of, on the one hand, ... but on the other hand, ... So that if I asked you, do you love sleep? Saying no probably wouldn't be right. And saying yes probably wouldn't be right. You're to love sleep in the right way. You're to love sleep as a gift from God, where we rest and we think on the fact that we're not him. That however bad we've been in any given day about bearing our own anxieties. Remember again from Philippians 4 that anxiety is a sin. Be anxious for nothing. Instead, pray and ask God for help. If you've been really bad about casting your anxieties on him through the day, realize that at night you have the opportunity to consciously do it, and even to physically do it. To say at the end of the day, that's it, I'm done. I'm done. You are done whether you want to admit it or not. So you might as well tell God that you're done and acknowledge that all these anxieties you've been bearing all day, you've sinfully borne them as if you're God, as if you're on the throne, as if you're in control, as if only there were just more hours in the day, you could really help God out, improve his world, really, you know, give him a leg up. No. On the one hand, it's a privilege that we get to sleep, and we should love sleep. On the other hand, we can't love sleep too much. We've said that there's a possibility that your sleeplessness can be physical. You could have some kind of staph infection like I had in college, or some other explanation for why you're not sleeping well. By the way, I confess, this is a very hard message for me to preach because I'm currently in about a 3-month sleep funk. I sleep like 3 hours. I'm awake. That's it. Doesn't matter if I go to bed at 9 or midnight. I go 3 hours and the body says, all right, you can't sleep. And so I'm up for about 3 more hours, and then I hope to kind of get back to sleep, get a few more hours before I have to get up and get on with my day. So I'm fighting this, right? I'm wondering what's physical. I'm wondering what's spiritual. I'm wondering what's sinful. I'm wondering what's just part of living in a fallen world with a lot of sin around. I don't know. So this isn't easy. I recognize that. But we have to say with Psalm 127, it's so wrongheaded to be up in the middle of the night because you bear anxious toil. Because you trust the strength of your own legs, or you trust the will within you to set the alarm clock earlier, to get up and to get it done. Ryan, is it wrong to ever get up early for exceptional circumstances? No. Is it wrong to ever stay up late and work? No. Once again, God hasn't given us a rule. Remember that it has to relate to the heart. And remember that we work these things out in wisdom. That's why it's here in this book of wisdom, of Proverbs. What we see is that sleep is a metaphor for trusting God. It's a metaphor for trusting God. This is our fifth point, and we come full circle now. Our sleep is this creational, natural, beautiful, significant part of your life that is a picture. It's a symbol. It's a metaphor. It gives you a lesson. It tells you that you're not God, and it reminds you that he is God and he doesn't sleep. So as you go to sleep at night and you know you can't do anything, you have to, at the end of the day, even though we may not consciously do it, you are at the end of the day saying, in effect, that's it, I'm done.
I can't do any more today. That's it. I'm clocking out. There's more time left in the day for many of us when we go to sleep. But when we go to sleep, we're saying, in effect, that's it. It may not have been a good day, but I put in my day and I'm done. This one's got to get closed. Close the books on this one. And when we do that, it's a metaphor for trusting God, not just during that night's sleep, but also in all of life. So when we're burdened, here's what I'm praying happens as I lay down burdened. So imagine a day where you fought anxiety all day and maybe anxiety won. Where it's just a cruddy time in your life. It's hard. A lot of things going on in your mind and you can't seem to shut them down. They just keep spinning. Look at Psalm 3, would you? Would you thumb back in your Bibles to Psalm 3? And we'll look at just a couple of verses from Psalm 3 and then Psalm 4. David's examples of sleeping when burdened. Psalm 3, in verse 1, O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Enemies are multiplying. Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, they're not only out to get him and maybe even kill him, but they're saying of his soul, there's no deliverance for him and God. God's not really on his side. But you, O Lord. Notice before the but you, O Lord, David tells God what is bothering him, but then he turns a corner. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me. He reminds himself and praises God that God's a shield, that God's his glory, that God is the one who lifts my head, literally lifts my countenance. You're the one who can make me happy. You're the one that can make me feel confident. You're the one that can remove anxiety. You're the one that can give comfort. I was crying to the Lord with my voice. And here, in this passage, he answered me. The psalmist doesn't always get an answer this quick, but here, he answered me. Verse 5 says, I laid down and slept. He laid down and slept when enemies were multiplying against him. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid of ten thousands of people who've set themselves against me. Imagine an army of 10,000 people against you. You're David. You know God's promises have come to you to be king, to rule the people. You have a heart to honor God. You know Saul is not a good king. And you're wandering about in caves just trying to avoid an army. How do you sleep at night? There's no security system. There's no attack dog. How do you sleep at night? You give it to the Lord and you sleep. Okay, look at Psalm 4. In verse 4, it says, tremble and do not sin. Even in your trembling, don't sin. How do I not sin in my trembling? Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. You can't sleep? You're bothered? Don't sin. Think on the Lord. Think on his word. Meditate while you're in your bed and be still. Still in your body, but yes, still in your soul. In verse 8, it says, I will both lie down and sleep. For you alone, O Lord, to make me to dwell in safety. So sweet sleep comes from a clear conscience with God and not fearing people. A clear conscience with God and not what others think. Sweet sleep comes from a steady confidence in God that he is watching, that he is wise, that he is in control, that he is powerful, that he's more powerful than whatever you're going through right now. That he's ordained it, that he's sovereign, that he's never off his throne, that you don't know better than him. And sweet sleep works in conjunction with biblical meditation and prayer. So that if we want sweet sleep, we must go to bed thoughtfully and not thoughtlessly. We must go to bed thinking on him, thinking on ourselves, thinking on our problem, giving them to him, and letting sleep be a metaphor for that day, hopefully,
if not for the next day, we lay in a bed and we rest, acknowledging that we can't do it. Sleep is a metaphor not only of our weakness, not only of God's infinite strength, but let's take this back to the gospel. Sleep is a picture, a metaphor of faith, of resting in Jesus. Caitlin read from us in Matthew 11, where Jesus said, and we saw this last week, "Come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Now, rest is sometimes awake rest, and sometimes it's asleep rest. But you're never more rested than when you're out of it. "Come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy laden." Rest, rest in Jesus' work on your behalf. Rest in the fact that he died on the cross to pay for sins, and he has forgiven them if you believe. Let your sleep be sweet to the glory of God, with confidence in the cross and confidence in a God who promises and works powerfully, wisely, mightily, while you wake and while you sleep.